This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Pandemic relocations. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
With many Americans opting to relocate for work during lockdowns, some areas fared better than others. We'll examine the data.
There's a feeling that people who are on the fence about getting the COVID vaccine can be persuaded with the right messages. We'll have examples.
The dwindling options to stocks if you want your money to grow. Personal finance expert Jonathan Clements makes his case.
And service members lining up to be part of the new American Space Force.
I found it interesting that General Raymond was so excited. There's thousands of service members from the other services, from the Navy, from the Army, that have expressed interest. Well, they've turned in their application. They want to switch over to the Space Force.
Abraham Mashi at the Washington Examiner on the Space Force as the new go-to armed service. We'll start with a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. A new analysis of U.S. Postal Service permanent change of address data through 2020 provides the clearest picture yet of how millions of domestic moves during the pandemic supercharged demographic shifts. From coast to coast, Americans migrated toward less dense, more affordable areas as they sought more space and in some cases became untethered by the ability to work from anywhere. Ariane Campo Flores, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, got a look at the data. Ariane, what's trending?
The general trend lines are these. Basically, people moved from higher density locations to lower density ones. So from big cities, big metro areas to the outlying suburbs of those metro areas, but also further afield to the suburbs that are further away. Some of them move to smaller metro areas. And you know, this is something that we've all, you know, we've been hearing about anecdotally over the course of the pandemic. Many folks have their own sort of personal examples or people that they know who have done something like this. But this is really something that the sort of clearest picture that we've had yet, backed up by data to show exactly, you know, where people went. And so some of the biggest losers in these migration patterns have been the big cities like New York, San Francisco, Boston, Chicago, and some of the biggest gainers have been areas of Texas and Florida. And that extends on down into, you know, areas that are seen as sort of recreational or vacation or second home type spots, say, you know, parts of South Carolina or Utah. So that's the main takeaways from our data dive.
And New York City seemed to really lose a lot, right? More folks have left New York for, say, Florida than anywhere else, right?
Yeah, and more people left the city due to migration in the past year than the previous 2 years combined. And the biggest, receiver of New Yorkers was New Jersey, and so one of the folks in our team spent some time reporting on Bergen County and looking at the big influx that they've had there of New Yorkers. But also on the receiving end was the state of Florida. I myself went to do some reporting in a county north of Tampa called Pasco County, which is a rapidly growing suburb. One of the families I spoke to was a couple, elderly couple, that moved from Long Island, New York, moved down. The husband decided that it was time to retire early and fulfill a lifelong dream of moving down to Florida, and so that's what they did. Wow. They basically accelerated their retirement plans and and bought a nice house in Land O'Lakes.
We're speaking with Ariane Campo Flores, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. He's got a story entitled "The Pandemic Changed Where Americans Live." The interesting thing about people fleeing the cities is that, as you point out in the story, it doesn't seem like there's an eagerness, perhaps by young people, to rush in and take their spots.
Right. That was one of the interesting findings in the data that we looked at, as well as a study by an economist at the Cleveland Fed. And what they found is that, you know, usually there's this cycle of flux of people, right, in normal times. And so you have people that may be leaving cities, but there's just a lot of like newcomers and a lot of fresh blood that's coming into cities. And so what the data show is that, you know, the big cities, there was a net loss of population due to migration in these big cities. But what was interesting is that even more than an outflow of people from cities, what was explaining that was basically a drying up of the inflow of people coming in.
Yeah, okay.
So that was what was driving that net loss more.
You referenced in the story the areas surrounding, or maybe the counties surrounding, the Dallas, Indianapolis, Nashville, Charlotte, and then you drill down with these specific cities like Salisbury, Maryland, Colorado Springs, Allentown, PA, Boise, Idaho. This is what, if you have a laptop and your company says you're free to go where you want, that's where some of these folks are winding up?
Yeah. I mean, so you see that's, I think, what explains some of these vacation destinations, like parts of South Carolina or parts of Utah, where people go and might have second homes, or maybe they've just, you know, it's just a vacation spot that they like to go to. That, you know, the ability to work remotely just untethered people and allowed them to move to other parts of the country and continue to do their work from there.
That's Ariane Campo Flores, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, vaccine messages that work.
When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you're talking to someone who isn't waiting for their turn to speak, but who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen, so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us, first full weekend of May. With all Americans over 16 now eligible to receive a coronavirus vaccine, healthcare workers and public health officials are turning their attention to the approximately one-third of Americans who say that they are on the fence or that they do not want to get vaccinated. Francis Steed Sellers, senior writer at The Washington Post, says no single message will persuade everyone, but a combination of strategies can work. Francis, what are we learning?
Well, we're learning a lot as we go along, but I think the key point here is that we're sort of at an inflection point in the vaccination strategy. So that we know the people who've gone to mass vac centers or made a huge effort, as we all know, people who've woken up early in the morning to try and get on a CVS or a Rite Aid website, all those people wanted to be vaccinated. Beyond them are people who, for very understandable reasons and very varied reasons, have some hesitation or are unable to get to those centers easily. And that's what these messages are about. How do you convince those people to make the decision? They don't have to be 100% gung-ho, right? They just need to tip over and decide they want to get vaccinated. And we're learning a lot as we go along, but there are some very general themes here, and that is that you can't have a sort of one-size-fits-all approach with vaccination. It's much more like personalized medicine. You need to address people's concerns and fears.
Okay. So politicians don't rank very highly in terms of being good message carriers in this case, correct?
Well, I think they can do damage if they actually see doubt in the vaccine. That's definitely true. And one of the unusual things about this vaccine campaign is we have the large number of Republican men who are on the fence or saying they do not want to get the vaccine. So political division is rather unusual in vaccines. Certainly, vaccine experts haven't seen it as clearly in the past. Any prominent figure getting a vaccine is a good thing, but more important is knowing people you trust who've got vaccines. So your local doctor, your pastor, all these people who we trust and have influence in our lives.
What was the point about being visible with the vaccine?
Well, we want to make it normal, right? So even though this may not make you go out and get a vaccine right away, knowing that other people are getting it, knowing that celebrities, knowing that actually politicians, you said, are taking it as part of their regular life, knowing that it's out there as something other people around the world are doing, is an important step.
We're speaking with Frances Steed Sellers, a senior writer at The Washington Post. She's got a good story entitled, "These Are the Pro-Vaccine Messages People Want to Hear." Okay, how about other approaches?
Well, I think some of the most interesting ones are these very localized ones. So we know that talking to your doctor, hearing from your doctor in your doctor's office is going to make a very difference. But social networks, that's a new thing, right? People have networks online. So making it a normal thing, talking to other people, getting reassurance in local networks is important. I talked some months ago to the Philadelphia Health Department as they were talking about setting up their vaccine. And again, instead of going to straight away to the big Eagle stars and making it a celebrity thing, they wanted to talk to people, to block captains, to people who you might see in your neighborhood, and make sure that they understood a reassuring vaccine message to give. So it's sort of a spectrum of things, but I think what we're learning more and more is that we need to tailor messages. We need to be able to reassure people.
Yeah.
Tom Frieden, who's the former CDC director, has been part of these focus groups, particularly with Republican men. And I talked to him after being in one of those groups, and he said, you know, they had the same questions as anybody else. People want the best for their families. They want to be reassured. So whether we're talking about hesitancy in African-American communities where there's a long history of distrust of public health for very good reasons, or whether we're talking about Republican men, addressing people's fears in a responsible way is a big step in overcoming and tipping people over to taking vaccines.
Elvis Presley in the mid-1950s, I think you said, was
right.
A huge seller for the polio vaccine, I guess.
Absolutely. So back in 1956, he went on the Ed Sullivan Show and had his shot online, much as Dolly Parton and other people now have had their shots online. So yeah, these big moments are memorable and can help in transforming people, you know, making people take a decision, a positive decision in public health.
Thanks, Frances. Frances Steed Sellers, senior writer at The Washington Post. Coming up next, the popularity of the Space Force.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Well, the U.S. Space Force got a boost when thousands of applications in March for transfer arrived from the Army, Navy, and Marine Corps. But other bureaucratic slowdowns may prevent it from keeping pace with adversaries. It's a story by Abraham Mashi, defense reporter at the Washington Examiner. Abraham, what's happening?
I found it interesting that General Raymond was so excited. There's thousands of service members from the other services, from the Navy, from the Army, that have expressed interest. Well, they've turned in their application. They want to switch over to the Space Force.
Are other services okay with that?
Well, that's the thing, is that the Space Force doesn't have a timeline for how to do this switchover, and it has to be voluntary, and the losing service, leadership of the losing service, has to agree to let them go. But there seems to be a process underway whereby first they're going to go asking for volunteers from the other services, and then if there's an act in Congress, they'll start assimilating some of the assets, the space assets that are held by those services still.
Mm. So if you are requesting a transfer from, say, the Army or the
right.
Navy, I guess the Air Force too, do you have to have specific skills that are required for this? Or
so the Air Force is a special case, right? Because the Space Force existed before and it was part of the Air Force. So all of those space professionals that were in the Air Force were sort of administratively transferred, administratively assigned, sort of at the creation of the Space Force, and then now there's this process whereby they're being sworn in as Space Force guardians, and that number is up to just over 5,000. I just got the report a few minutes ago. So 5,000 have been officially switched over to Space Force guardians. They've taken the oath from the Air Force. Now there's still about 10,000 more Air Force professionals and civilians who haven't become actual Space Force members yet. The process for the other services that have space assets, like Army and Navy, and also Marine Corps, that's through this new volunteer call that went out for the month of March.
Okay. And it's not that easy to switch. There's the bureaucracies involved, I guess?
Well, it didn't look like it's that difficult because there's all a whole bunch of questions and answers online. There's some forms that they have to fill out. They give their rationale. Obviously, the Space Force, General Raymond is always talking about sort of the lean and mean, lethal new service that is purpose-built to be small, to be lethal, to be incredibly highly educated and experienced individuals who are specialized in sort of space intelligence and cyber warfare and these types of things. So I think it is going to be difficult from the standpoint of it's going to be sort of an elite service of highly qualified and trained individuals, and they're going to keep it small. So it's not necessarily sure that they're going to take all these individuals over, but there's excitement. I think General Raymond really likes that. Although I found it interesting when we were on the call with him, it was a media call a couple weeks ago, that he wouldn't say exactly how many thousands, and they still refused to give that number.
We're speaking with Abraham Mashey, defense reporter at the Washington Examiner. His piece is called Space Force is Suddenly the Go-To Armed Service. Back up for just a second, and what is the Space Force going to do? You referenced, say, cyber warfare. What else is involved?
Right. Well, General Raymond always talks about how the Space Force is to protect America's space architecture. So the idea is, you know, we have all these satellites that are orbiting the Earth, and they're doing everything from, you know, operating your cell phones to ATMs to, you know, cars are connected. Everything is connected to sort of our space architecture. And, you know, 20, 30 years ago, we thought of space as sort of this benign place that you just put your satellite up there, it's going to be safe, things are going to work. But our adversaries, our great power competitors of China and Russia in particular, have already been testing sort of offensive weapons that can shoot down or disable our satellites. Like a few years ago, China fired from Earth to destroy one of its own satellites as sort of a test, and sort of 3,000 pieces of that satellite are still orbiting the Earth. And then twice now, Russia has tested a mechanism, a satellite that goes up into the into orbit and is able to sort of chase another satellite. It chased one of a U.S. spy satellite just to line up with its orbit, and then it released a second satellite that fired a projectile. Now, it didn't damage or harm our satellite, but it demonstrated the capability.
Thanks, Abraham. Abraham Mashey, defense reporter at the Washington Examiner. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. In the sport of business, we're all players. And with the game always changing, you need to be versatile. So does your wardrobe. You want both style and comfort to look as good as you feel inside the office or out. That's what Cuts Clothing is all about. Cuts Clothing keeps you sharp wherever the game takes you, from the boardroom to the bar to the gym. How? They reinvented men's clothing, starting with the T-shirt. Their Pika Tri-Blend fabric is buttery soft, wrinkle-free, and keeps its shape. Everything I've worn from Cuts is next-level comfort. Their polos, hoodies, and crew sweatshirts, all classics, made modern with custom-engineered fabrics you have to wear to believe. So versatile, you'll never need to take them off, and so comfortable, you won't want to. It's not just the lifestyle. It's not just clothing. It's office leisure apparel for the sport of business. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka coming up this half hour, making the case for stocks. Also, job interview disasters and post-COVID life in Gibraltar. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, a recent study of data collected from all 50 states found that implicit bias against older people was most prevalent in the country's southeastern and northeastern states. Implicit bias is a subconscious negative attitude. More from This Weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
If you're biased against older people, it may be in part because of where you live. Claire Ansbury of the Wall Street Journal has written about this and has a story. Claire, what did this study look at that you looked at?
The study looked at something called implicit bias, and that is different from explicit bias in that it's more subconscious, and the researchers felt that that was more accurate because it's automatic, and people will readily acknowledge explicit bias these days. What they did was they took data from people who were 15 to 94 and had taken these implicit association tests with images of both an older person and a younger person, and they paired those images with positive or negative words. And they found that people who associated a young face with a positive word like beautiful very quickly had an implicit bias towards young people. And if it took them a long time to associate an older face with a positive image, they felt that was an implicit negative bias.
Claire, what did they find in terms of geography?
It's interesting. They found that the high implicit states were centered in the southeast and the northeast, and the low implicit bias states were in the northwest and Alaska. That was kind of surprising to them because you think of a lot of the southeast states like the Carolinas and Florida as retirement destinations and a lot of older adults living there. So they were kind of surprised by that. They didn't look at the reasons behind that. That was not what the study was trying to measure. It was just sort of like a snapshot. This is where we have found people who test to have high implicit bias live, and here's where the people with lower implicit bias live.
We're speaking with Claire Ansbury of the Wall Street Journal. Claire, why are numbers and research like this important to know?
Well, a lot of research these days, and it's really been increasing lately, on ageism and what sort of impact that has on people's health, both physical and mental health. And we've really seen this with the pandemic, a lot of research on ageism and how it's affected older adults. So if you can pinpoint, and researchers have also found that attitudes can change. Stereotypes they're sort of ingrained sometimes from as young of age as 3, but they can change. So if you know where there's a lot of implicit bias, that maybe you could have awareness campaigns, education campaigns, do more programs to encourage cross-generation interactions to challenge the stereotypes, and that in turn can improve health.
Claire, go back and expand a little on the numbers and the reasons why this became important during the pandemic. Why is it important not to look at older people in a certain way?
Yeah, it was really interesting. Some of the research looked at people who had what they called an hostile ageism, where they really felt like older people were just a drain on the healthcare system and the economy. And those people, they found, did things like wash their hands less frequently. They didn't really honor or believe in the importance of distancing. They found people who were what they called benevolently ageist, who were protective but patronizing, washed their hands more frequently and were more concerned about the pandemic and kept social distance. So a lot of the ageist attitudes affected whether people took the pandemic seriously. There was a study of tweets, and it found that nearly one-fourth of the tweets downplayed the importance of the virus because it was deadlier among older individuals, so therefore it didn't matter as much.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Claire Ansbury with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. Coming up next, is there a good alternative to owning stocks these days? This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness? We're all dealing with a lot right now. I'm sure you feel the same kind of added stress I do. Then you should know about BetterHelp. BetterHelp isn't a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. Start communicating in under 48 hours. Schedule weekly or monthly phone or video sessions or whatever works for you. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. That's why there's a special offer for This Morning with Gordon Deal listeners. 10% off your first month. Visit BetterHelp.com/Gordon. That's BetterHelp.com/Gordon. And join the over 1 million people who've taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp, they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. That's 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Is there an alternative to owning stocks if you want your money to grow? And let's say you're not interested in investing in a rental property or a small business. Jonathan Clements, personal finance expert at humbledollar.com, says after factoring in taxes and inflation, cash investments and most bonds are priced to lose money. He's here to make his case for stocks. Jonathan, explain.
So I understand why people are worried right now. I mean, we have all this craziness on the fringes of the market. You know, we're talking about things like Bitcoin, all these Robinhood traders, what's been going on with GameStop and these special purpose acquisition companies. I'm not suggesting that that stuff is fine. And I also know people are really alarmed because the stock market seems so expensive. And a key reason is because corporate earnings have been depressed by the economic shutdown that we had last year. And as a consequence, measures of market valuation, particularly price earnings ratios, look extraordinarily high. But still, I would contend that if you're a long-term investor, there really is no alternative to investing in the stock market.
You referenced a balance, too, and you did some comparing of valuations between, say, U.S. stocks and European stocks.
So if I was only investing in the S&P 500, you know, I might indeed be a little bit nervous. When you look at the S&P 500 these days, you know, almost a third of it is made up of these big technology companies with these really high valuations that had a great run in recent years. But if you're globally diversified, the valuations on your portfolio look much more reasonable. And to give you a sense, you know, currently U.S. stocks are about 50% more expensive than foreign stocks. And even within the U.S. market, those large cap growth stocks within the S&P 500 are about 50% more expensive than small company stocks and 50% more expensive than large cap value stocks, those slower growing but more reasonably priced securities. So as a consequence, if you own a portfolio that's globally diversified, and I would encourage people to do that, you own a collection of stocks that's really much more reasonably priced than if you look just at those big stocks that we hear about all the time, you know, the Facebooks and the Apples and the Alphabets and so on.
Mm. We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com, and he's written a piece entitled Hanging Tough, and he's making the case for stocks. Why not bonds? What's the issue?
So if you have a short time horizon, let's say you've got money that you need to spend within the next 5 years, by all means, you have that money in high-quality short-term bonds or in a savings account, a CD, a money market fund. But if you have more than 5 years to invest, you really need to seriously think about investing in stocks, because the fact is, at current yield, once you factor in inflation and once you factor in taxes, you're simply not going to make any money with bonds or with cash investments. If you want to make your money grow over the long haul, you really have to have your money in that globally diversified stock portfolio. Now, keep in mind, even though I'm advocating that, I expect that just as bond and cash returns are going to be really low in the years ahead, I also think the stock returns are going to be relatively low in the years ahead. We're not going to get that 7% points a year, you know, above inflation that we've seen historically. But still, over a reasonably long time horizon, if you've got a decade or more to invest, you should make a positive after inflation, after tax return with stocks. And you're simply not going to get that with bonds or cash investments.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. Coming up next, examples of people wrecking job interviews.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Well, as more Americans return to the workforce, many may be out of practice with a job interview, whether in person or through a Zoom call. Here's how to avoid saying and doing the wrong things from Jackie Ducci, founder of Ducci Associates, a recruitment firm. Jackie, what do you recommend?
Well, first of all, I can't believe some of the crazy things that actually happen. One thing that I've seen a lot over the course of my career, and I can't believe I have to say this out loud, but don't flirt with your interviewer. This is something that's happened a lot to the girls that I work with. It's happened to my clients. And I think candidates sometimes come in and, like, they think it's a way to kind of connect or build a connection with someone, and it just comes off as wildly inappropriate.
Wow.
So that's a big one.
Mm. So you kind of cited some horror stories that you've been through. Who was the one woman who talked about she was excited to start working there because all her ex-boyfriends worked there, and she wanted to see the look on their faces when she showed up?
Yeah, I mean, different things like that happen all the time, and it always amazes me that people don't have a better sense of just not being outlandish like that, but it does happen. There are some more subtle things, too. Like, I think, you know, if you go into an interview and you're asked, you know, why do you want this job, and you just say, oh, well, I'm looking for anything because, you know, I've been laid off during COVID or whatever, that's also really unattractive. It comes across a little desperate, so... something to avoid for sure. You should always explain why you want that job and not just that you're out there looking for anything.
Okay. And I guess to drill down deeper, I mean, reasons might be what? You don't want to say, I need the money, but are you looking for a challenge or it's a new path or something like that?
Anything like that. Yeah. I mean, you have to think from the employer's perspective. They're concerned about retention. So they don't just want someone to fill the seat. They want someone to fill the seat, hopefully for as long as possible. So if you can explain why you want to be with that company long term, why you think it's a great fit, that's like music to the ears of any executive or hiring manager.
Well, we're speaking with Jackie Ducci. She's the founder and CEO of Ducci Associates, a recruitment firm with offices in West Palm Beach, Florida, and also Connecticut. We're talking about how to avoid bombing on your job interview. What else do you think folks should keep in mind? Is this a different landscape?
Yes and no. I mean, I still think all the standard traditional advice applies. I mean, if I look over the course of my career, when people quote unquote bomb, it's usually the same mistakes over and over again. I don't know that it's any different now because we're kind of coming post pandemic. I think it's the same stuff. I really do.
And then soft skills, are they playing any more of a role these days? Shaking hands, eye contact, is that more important now or the same as it always was?
Well, I mean, now so many of these interviews are happening virtually, so I think people that are pretty skilled at interviewing through Zoom or Skype are tending to do better in the process and kind of get the attention of these hiring managers sooner. So that's something I encourage everybody to kind of practice. It's a whole different game when you're doing this through a computer screen than when you're one-on-one. It can actually be harder. So practicing that, you know, getting comfortable being on the camera and all that can help a lot.
Thanks, Jackie. Jackie Ducci, founder and CEO of Ducci Associates. Coming up next, why Gibraltar is saying, look at us.
When you call a Dell Technologies advisor, you're talking to someone who isn't waiting for their turn to speak, but who actually wants to hear what you have to say. They're focused on you, ready to give advice on everything from laptops to the cloud, and offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Our advisors listen, so you know your small business needs have been heard. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Ask Dell.
We'll finish with this. Gibraltar, thanks to its small size and access to vaccines supplied by the UK, is among a handful of places in the world to have vaccinated most of its population against COVID-19. The Wall Street Journal says on that strip of densely populated rock jutting into the Mediterranean Sea, people there are tasting freedom. Gibraltar, population 34,000. Says it's fully vaccinated around 85% of adults and 98% of adults over the age of 60. Authorities were also vaccinating some residents of Spain who work in Gibraltar next door. Schools and businesses are open. There's indoor dining at restaurants, and authorities have dropped a late-night curfew. And you only have to wear a mask in places like buses, shops, and healthcare centers. The territory's proximity to Spain does rattle some, however. The Spanish government said that country had fully vaccinated only around 8% of its population. Little Gibraltar, by the way, is a British territory bordered by Spain to the north. It is just 3 miles long and less than a mile wide. That's about twice the size of Central Park in New York City. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.